Really just ask you what you can tell me that I got wrong, or that where you'd like to fill out the picture that I gave. You see, I didn't have much on the family background, really. I mean, I got her to Woodgate and I got her married, but after that I didn't gather how relationships worked out in the family. Do you see what I mean?
Yes.
I wonder if you could fill me out on that a bit.
Well, Woodgate was sold when my brother-in-law, Adrian Corbett, died, and my sister didn't want to keep it on. She had children, you see, who were still either at university or at school, and so she moved and she bought a house at Chiddingham. And moved there, and I think that the Corbett family were very sad that it was going out of the Corbett family. In fact, George, who was then only a schoolboy, was very sad indeed. I remember him saying, "One day I will go back to Woodgate." I don't know if he remembers that. So I suppose there was then a slight rift, and my sister, Nita, was already had cancer and was dying of cancer. And so wasn't perhaps the easiest person, you see. And she was, I suppose, thinking of her fatherless children and didn't want the expense and the size of Woodgate. And I think that was a slight rift. And then Marjorie bought this...
Wickens.
And moved there with Brown.
Yes, yes.
Which was in the same district, of course.
Yes. She loved that area, didn't she?
She loved it. She loved Ashdown Forest, and she was whatever you call, not a ranger, or whatever you call yourself, of Ashdown Forest,
yes.
You know, forester.
Right.
I don't know what the term is.
Yes.
But she was on that, and she loved it dearly.
Yes.
And of course, her mother had done all this work with foster children, East Enders who came out and were fostered out there, and so she knew the district and the people.
Right, yes.
And have worked there a lot.
Yes. I wonder whether you could sort of fill me out a bit on Brian, because I never met him, you see. I mean, he had a strong sense of humour.
Yes, he had. Mm. He was an awfully nice person. He was, I think, a great support to her. She was devoted to him. She said that she never stood for Parliament because it would have wrecked her marriage. Wrecked it from sheer physical absence, not because he would have disapproved, because he never disapproved. And that's why she always fought seats which were unwinnable.
Yes, quite.
She just did it to sort of show the flag.
Yes.
But she knew she wouldn't ever get in and couldn't get in. I don't think Brown would have minded, but he would have minded her absence.
Yes, quite. They really were a companionship.
Oh, indeed they were. Yes, indeed they were. And although I don't think he went on any tours or anything of that kind with her, I'm sure she discussed it all with him. And they were a devoted couple. And then when Michael came down and changed the houses, understandably he would. Certainly his wife would want to. She wanted a more up-to-date kitchen. And she changed the downstairs. And I remember Marjorie saying to me, you see, they've changed this sitting room, and now the chair that Brown had isn't there, and that corner has been moved, and it's no longer Brown's corner. And this was something that hurt her a lot.
Was it rather insensitive, sort of?
Oh, I think utterly insensitive. Because I felt, well, they'd only got to wait a few years and they could have done it then.
Well, quite. So Brown, really, I mean, see, it's an interesting marriage, really, because she's a pioneer feminist in a marriage which, must have taken a lot from him to tolerate, really, in a way.
Well, he was a very tolerant person, and he was very fond of her. They both doted on Michael. Michael could do no wrong. He was quite happy for Marge to go off to Geneva or whatever, or Delhi or wherever it was, on her own.
Yes.
And he didn't want to be touted around with her.
A lot of husbands in those days would have objected to their wife not doing her domestic duty.
Yes, I think they would. Sort of, I don't imagine she was an awfully good housewife. Mm. I don't really know when I say that. I really have no reason for saying it. I've always found that she always had servants.
Yes, quite. And yet, you see, she could identify with people who did have to do housework somehow.
Yes,
I don't
very
know.
Much,
she's very, very clever, really.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was bred into her because, you see, her mother did.
Yes.
And as a child, she went around visiting with her mother these houses where they took in EastEnders.
Yes.
And it was very much a sort of taking around hot soup, I think.
Right.
Mm. But anyway, she saw the inside of the cottages, which I suppose the ordinary lady of the manor didn't.
She had a sort of practical interest in housekeeping, even though she didn't herself have
to do
it.
Well, she did. And she had an ability to talk to anybody. Mm. I mean, she'd be equally at home with a gardener or with a next door Prime Minister.
Another thing I thought I didn't say enough about, really, was religion, actually. Religion did matter, didn't it?
Yes, it did. But I'm a fairly irreligious person myself.
Yes.
So that I never discussed it with her. But she certainly wanted to go to church and did go to church if she stayed with me, so that I took her.
Really?
And I think it meant something to her. And George told me that when she said she didn't want to live to be 100, I think she thought in terms of another life.
Hmm. So it wasn't the end.
So it wasn't the end. Yes.
Right. Yes. That must make a difference, mustn't it? I mean, I'm not religious either, but
I suppose it does. I mean, to me, I'm irreligious in that way, and it doesn't really make a heap of the difference. I don't want to play a harp. And if it's the end, it's the end. Well,
yes.
I shan't know.
Yes,
but,
quite.
I think perhaps it did make a difference.
Yes, it may have done. Did you actually know her parents quite well?
Yes, I don't know quite well. I didn't.
Mm.
I first went to Woodgate when I suppose I must have been about 9 or 10, taken by my sister, who was recently married, you see, to Adrian. And they were terribly kind, but they were so different from my family that it was an eye-opener to me. Mm. There was Mrs. Corbett, my brother-in-law's mother, you see, in breeches, which to me was very startling, and golf stockings, which he wore outside the breeches, and golf shoes. She'd never see. I don't think she ever wore Wellingtons.
What are golf shoes?
Golf stockings, knitted stockings with turned down tops.
I see.
You
yes,
see,
yes.
I think probably hand knitted.
Yes.
Very thick, with these rolled down tops just below the knee, and she had breeches which weren't stick out breeches like riding breeches. They were fairly sleek.
So rather masculine sort of impression.
Absolutely, yes, but she wasn't the least masculine.
No.
And I don't think she can have had short hair, because nobody did in those days, but that rather was the impression. She was very upright.
Mm.
And she did an enormous amount of gardening. I don't mean picking roses, I mean digging.
Mm. So Marjorie, you think, gets quite a lot of it?
Oh yes, yes, she did, yes. And she was I think always out of doors. I suppose she had servants. Don't imagine she ever did a thing in the house.
Mm.
And that's then Charles, who, all my family being over 6 foot, Charles struck me as almost a dwarf. He was so little. And Adrian Corbett, you see, was tall. And
so you're giving the impression of an open air, rather free and easy sort of life.
Oh yes, very much so, yes. And then they had these lovely woods that Charles and his brothers, were they dug the ponds there with their own hands. I don't mean with a tractor, I mean with bucket and spade. And they were devoted to the ponds, and we used to go down there and swim, and walk through the woods, which were, as a child, they were to me fairy-like.
Yes, I'm sure they were. Well, they still are pretty fine woods.
Yes, they're lovely.
Yes. What about her relations with her parents? I mean, it was a very free and easy sort of setup, wasn't it?
I think she was very fond of them. I suppose seeing her there as a child, it wouldn't have occurred to me she wasn't fond of them.
No.
It was a conventional thing to be.
No, quite. But it was a sort of rather a democracy in the family.
Yes,
it was.
Yes, and you see, she and her sister and her brother were taught by them, by their father.
Right.
They did have, I think, some governesses for French and German. He taught them classics. And he was a member of Parliament, so it was a bit spasmodic.
Mm.
Because he was sometimes up in London.
Right.
But anyway, he taught them enough classics to get them all into university. Mm. The two girls, which was rather unusual, and the boy.
Yes, quite. It was a good education. And she also did some of the teaching, didn't she? I mean, Mari did some of the teaching too.
That I don't know. I always heard it was he who did the teaching.
He did the Latin, but I think she taught some things, as I remember. They were, then there was a governess, wasn't there?
Yes, because they were all bilingual.
Yes.
And I once asked Margie why she read classics, you see. And she said, well, there wasn't any point in her reading modern languages because she was bilingual.
Right. Why didn't she do better at university, academically, She didn't do very well, did she?
No, I don't know. Perhaps it was that she hadn't been taught really so awfully well. Mm. I mean, if she'd done French or German, I think she'd have sailed through.
Yes, well, quite.
You see?
Absolutely. She didn't really...
But she didn't
she
do
had
that.
Illnesses, of course, I think, at university, which didn't help.
And she told me that her father went up to Cambridge, and found that there was only one bedsitter for a girl, you see. And he said, but when I was at wherever he was, I think he was at the house, not at Cambridge.
Yes, I think he was. Yes.
Anyway, he said, when I was an undergraduate, I had two rooms, and I'd set my daughter to have two rooms. And this was very startling to them. But he bullied them into providing it.
Did he really? Yes, sort of on the equalitarian grounds.
Yes, which is quite astonishing.
Interesting, yes, yes. Yes, yes. If one moves on then to her married life, see, the thing I never really could ask about much was her relationship with Michael. See, I couldn't really ask her about that.
Well, she doted on Michael.
Did she? Yes.
Absolute dote. He could do no wrong.
Hmm.
He was never corrected. He was a very daredevil little boy.
Hmm.
And my sister, whose eldest son, Christopher, was a couple of years younger than Michael, always felt that Michael was leading Christopher astray, and I dare say he was.
Mm.
You know, and the sort of thing that would happen was that Michael lit a fire on the steps of the barn, which was full of hay, and the steps were wood, and Christopher was helping him, you see, until fortunately, I think before the whole thing went up, somebody found it and put them out.
Right.
But nothing was said to Michael.
Mm. Why not, really? Because, you see, she was such a sensible person, Marjorie. Why didn't she see that with her own son?
I don't know. He was very good looking.
Mm.
He had enormous charm. And I don't think she ever corrected him. I mean, he would put the younger children onto a horse that was quite unsuitable, or pony, and give it a good whack, would never be corrected.
Mm.
I never remember her saying to Michael, for God's sake, don't do that, you know, or the equivalent, or stop it.
Mm. And likewise, Brian didn't either.
Brian didn't say very much, anyway. No, I don't think he ever did, no.
So was he really, I mean, was Michael pretty impossible as child, do you think? I mean,
yes, it's enormous charm that he could get away with anything.
That's his mother's again, I suppose, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, he had this shock of golden curls.
Mm.
He was very good looking. And he was quite good at things.
Mm.
At doing this and that. He was very courageous.
Mm. Mm.
And she was enormously proud of him, and Oxford has been the stroke of the Oxford boat and that sort of thing, right. You know?
Yes.
When he got that age. Well, as a little boy, she was proud of him, of all he did.
Yes. Of course, one needs to remember that it was a long time before she had children, wasn't it?
Yes.
And had
yes.
him. I mean, that is, he was longed for before
he arrived.
He was
longed for, yes.
That's part of the background of the
yes.
thing.
Yes. And she adored him.
Yes, yes. There was one episode which Michael himself told me about when she stood for Bury St Edmunds in 1944.
Yes.
He didn't turn up on the hustings with her. And he realised afterwards that he really should have gone. And she said, "You should have backed me up, you know." Mm. And he was rowing or doing something in Oxford and didn't come. And he always regretted that he hadn't been to back her up, mm. really. But I sort of had the feeling that he was very much growing away from his mother at that stage.
Well, he was politically, you see, too.
Really?
I mean,
so?
I imagine he's now a Tory.
Yes.
I don't think he shared her politics at all. I don't know that he had many politics, but he didn't.
Mm. Mm. Not interested in politics?
Not really, no. But if anything, they would be right rather than left.
Yes, yes. How did his relationship with Pamela affect his relationship with his mother? I mean...
Well, she was determined it was going to be a success.
Mm.
And she was quite determined she was never going to criticise Pamela, whatever. And she never did.
Yes, I mean, see, to me, just seeing what I saw, it was potentially very embarrassing for Pamela. There was this very powerful mother-in-law around, very fond of her son, strongly feminist and all that. Pamela comes into the family and it's not easy for her. I mean, I would have thought. But in fact, you see it from another point of view.
I see it totally from the other point of view. I don't see you're quite right. I resented the fact when they took over the house and they once changed it. I felt they could have waited.
Mm.
I know it was old-fashioned and convenient and the kitchen wasn't anything very much. And obviously you want more to come there. But if they changed the kitchen and left the sitting room, I think they could have left the sitting room the same, because after all, they didn't want, presumably, to banish her to her bedsitter, which had been their bedroom, hers and Brown's, although she, in fact, she did use it as a sitting room.
Mm.
Fort de Mure.
Yes, yes.
Really?
Yes.
But I felt that Pamela was unsympathetic and found it rather a bore to have her mother-in-law there, and was quite obviously looking forward to the day when she wouldn't be there.
Mm.
And would say, of course, one day we shall do this in the garden, or we'll do that, you see. Well, I think that's a thing that could but wait to be said until.
I quite agree with that. What was the background to that, really? I mean, they lived in Hampstead, didn't they?
Yes, and then they moved in because they thought she shouldn't be alone.
Is that, yes, I see.
I think maybe she'd had a couple of falls or something.
Yes, well, fair
enough.
They
thought she shouldn't be left alone. I don't know what age she was then, but she can't have been, I suppose.
Well, I think probably she was about 90-ish when they moved
in. She may have been. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So then they moved in with her.
With her, yes. And they left her her bedroom, which had been hers and Brown's bedroom, which was a lovely big room. I don't know if you were sort of.
Yes, I did. Yes.
But it was. They left that intact, and they kept on saying they'd left it intact, and that irritated me because what right had they to do otherwise?
Mm. Mm.
they were being given this house to avoid death duties. Of course they should leave it intact.
Yes.
But the sitting room, they completely changed. Mm. And the kitchen, which I don't suppose Marjorie went into very much anyway, it didn't matter, they changed that. Okay. And then they changed the terrace outside.
That's right.
I'm sure it was an improvement, but again, I felt it could have been left a little bit longer.
Yes. So, it seemed to me that Pamela was quite a tough person, actually, but maybe she'd had things to put up with, I don't know. But
I suppose she did think of my mother-in-law, this well-known lady, and so on. I suppose she did think of that.
She brought up four children, hadn't she, after? It is four children they had, isn't it? And one of them died, didn't she? But
Yes.
So she must have sort of had quite a life of her own.
Yes, she did, and then, of course, the one who died in a motor...
Yes.
And that was a terrible tragedy, because she was the bright one of the family, and she was beautiful, and she was clever, and she was everything. Mm. And Oriel, the surviving daughter, is not beautiful. She's certainly clever, but she had none of the charm and glamour that the other one had had. And this was made very plain to her as a child. In fact, she was told by her mother, "I wish it had been you that had been in the car." I mean, Oriel told me that herself. And that, I think, is something that will stay with her for the rest of her life.
That is extraordinary. A certain insensitivity there, isn't there?
Utter insensitivity, I thought.
So, would she sort of, in a sense, escape to you? Do you think, did you have the feeling she was getting away when she came to visit you?
I think she did, and I think she thoroughly enjoyed being fated. I asked in all the local Liberals that I knew. I always gave a cocktail party for her of my friends, and they all knew of her. I knew one or two people who had known her or had met her earlier, anyway, had read about her. And so she was fated very much as the grand old lady. Mm. She enjoyed that enormously.
Yes.
You see? Yeah. And she enjoyed being given a bit of the garden to weed and make herself useful. She enjoyed being driven around.
So would she sort of, do you feel she shed her burdens when she came to you?
I think probably she did. She never, ever said one word of criticism of Michael, never of Michael in her life, but never of Pamela.
No. That's very characteristic. You see, the fact that I didn't realise there was another picture of the whole thing illustrates her discretion, really.
Yes,
I mean, she never, ever said anything.
And well, I think I told her in my letter of the episode when she came and found the handkerchief that Marjorie had dropped. And when Pamela came into the room, Marjorie, who had been sitting by the fireplace as the honoured guest, shrank visibly. And she became a little old woman. Whereas she had been the honoured, welcome guest.
Yes. Do you think there's a certain amount of jealousy between Pamela and her mother-in-law getting all this attention? I mean, do you think that's part of it, in a way, that...
I think maybe Pamela felt she would never catch up. She would never be the local celebrity that Marjorie had been and was. Possibly?
Yes, I mean, looking at it from her point of view, I suppose it was difficult. All the same, it was a bit insensitive, I must say, the way she behaved. So, when she arrived to stay with you, I mean, what would she do? How would she spend her time?
Well, when she came, when I fetched her from the station, she'd no sooner come into the house and she'd say, "Oh, I've got my gardening gloves, where would you like me to start?" and there was one little bit by the gate, a little sort of triangular bed, And I said, well, that's the bit you did before, you know. What about that? And I would give her a cushion to sit on, gardening kneeler. And down she would go on her knees and weed. And sometimes after a bit she'd say, well now, she was then, I suppose, you see, rising 90, I must sit down for a few minutes. So she'd come in and she'd look at the paper and sit down and sitting on the seat. Then out she'd go again.
What about getting up in the morning and that sort of thing? I mean, was she...
No problem.
And was she very sort of austere in a way, in the way she lived? I mean, that is not asking much of life, do you think?
Oh, no, she didn't. I think I gave her my bedroom, which is next door to the bathroom. Can't quite remember that. I think I must have. Oh, no, I didn't. I know. My brother turned out of his bedroom, which is next door to the bathroom, and he went up to the attic bedroom, which is our spare room, so that she would be on a level for the bathroom, which is the loo. Mm. But she needed no kind of looking after.
No.
I did sort of keep an eye when she came down the stairs, because I got rather windy, short, steep staircase. Yes. Mm. And the last time, when she came for my 80th birthday, she said she wouldn't come and stay. She was afraid of coming to stay with me because I haven't got a banister, I've got a rope down the side. And she thought that would give. Well, it does, you see.
Yes.
So I arranged for her to stay with a friend who has a kinder staircase and a bigger house. And she stayed there. And one of my nephews picked her up in London and drove her to Norfolk. And she stayed two nights, I think, with these friends. And another nephew took her back again.
Yes, that sounds a nice arrangement. Yeah. Did she, I'm wondering whether she sort of really felt, towards the end of her life, fed up with getting older? And did she talk about that to you very much at all?
No, she was quite philosophical, recognising her limitations, that she could only garden for an hour or whatever, and then she'd have to sit down. She didn't groan about it.
Hmm.
She just went and sat down.
Yes.
And then went back again.
She didn't talk about the business of getting older with you much at all. I mean, it was always... See, with me, it was one of the problems was she was quite willing to talk about the past with me, but she was terribly interested in the present and the future.
Yes, she was.
You know, she didn't linger on the past really a lot, except she would talk quite a lot about her childhood, actually. She liked talking about that, her Sussex childhood.
Yes, she talked to me a bit about it. And of course she asked me, because I was then on quite a lot of committees and things, and she would ask me and about my mental health work and about our group homes that we'd started, and she'd be interested in that, you see. And politics, of course. And, you see, I was a Labour candidate in Bowes and Edmonds a year after she'd been a Liberal candidate.
Really? In 45?
Yes, I was there in 45, and I fought it in 45, and I fought it in 50.
Oh.
And so she was quite interested in that, you see, because she was the first woman candidate that had ever stood in Bowes and Edmonds, which is a very conventional conservative seat. And so that she had broken the ice, I felt, for me, really.
Right, yes.
I hadn't chosen it, therefore they'd chosen me anyway, but I hadn't chosen it for that reason.
No.
But,
actually, it was quite interesting. I mean, she was a very mild person who never gave the impression of being angry about anything very much, but when I talked to her about the Bury St Edmunds by-election, she was really angry at the way the Conservatives had rigged things against her.
Yes.
That is, it wasn't a fair fight,
no.
Was the impression she had. And even though it was 30 years earlier, she was still angry about it, you could tell. It was like, she said it was like Ethan's will, you know, Dickens.
Oh, it was when I fought it.
Was it really?
Oh, yes. Mm. When I fought it, the Duke of Grafton, who owned half Suffolk, had one of his bailiffs or somebody outside each polling station taking the names of the men who went in for his tenants.
And but he didn't know how they voted.
No, he didn't, but he jolly well reminded them how they ought to vote and that they were living in tired cottages.
Extraordinary, yeah. Yeah. Amazing how long that lasted, yeah. That attitude.
And when I fought it, I was a WI organiser, and I had been taking a school on public speaking there the week before I was nominated as a candidate. And I stayed with a charming couple who had a large house there, and I didn't tell them that I was going to come up for selection committee, it was none of their business anyway. And when I was selected, they never asked me into their house again.
Did when Marjorie came to stay with you, actually, did she actually go to the local WI and sort of mix with the local?
No, I didn't go. I wasn't a member of the WI there, and so she hadn't any opportunity to do it. But she was, of course, she was an asset in any party.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And it was, if I had people in, I mean, it was dead easy, you know.
She could make conversation.
She could make conversation. She would enter into their interests. And if I asked a local Liberal, whatever, you know, there, she would ask what was happening and the Liberal. And I wasn't a member of the Liberal Party, but she would ask what was going on. And she was interested in the people concerned with my mental health set up.
Because that, again, goes back to her mother, doesn't it? Her mother was very much involved in social work of all
she kinds. Was, yes, yes. And so she was interested in any of my work as a social worker. Mm. And of course she was a very good listener.
Yes, she was, wasn't she? Yes, that also makes her a social asset in many ways.
Yeah.
Did she never argue with you about going Labour? I mean, she never was.
No, her sister was Labour, you see.
Yes.
Seriously.
Yes.
I think she would rather I was Liberal.
But you never sort of argued about it.
No, she never taxed me with it or anything.
Because
I think she was quite pleased I wasn't Conservative.
Yes, and she was never Conservative, was she? I mean,
no.
She was always anti-establishment, really.
Yes, yes. And I think she was quite pleased about that and didn't mind, really, whether I was Labour or Liberal.
Yes, interesting. Did she ever talk about this granddaughter of hers who died to you?
Yes, very sadly, yes. Mm. Not very much, and I didn't know her. But it was a terrible tragedy, because although at that time she had a great boyfriend, this girl, she was in fact being driven home by somebody she hardly knew.
I see.
Who I think had a new car, and I mean, it was clearly his fault.
Mm.
He was driving too fast and he ran into something.
Was he killed as well, the boy?
No, he wasn't.
Mm. How frightful.
Mm. But it was a sort of thing you felt that could so easily have been avoided. You know, it was just a series of wrong decisions, in a way.
Yes, well, yes, most of these things.
In fact, I think, I'm not sure that her own boyfriend wasn't there and couldn't take her back for some reason, and this young man did instead, you know, or something stupid like that.
Yes, yes.
And then, you see, Oriel, the remaining daughter, had this appalling rheumatism as a child.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
And was on some incredible number of aspirins a day.
Really?
Something awful. And had to rest, even as a child of 12 or 13. She had to rest for an hour every afternoon. Imagine how easy that is. And she was not as bright as her sister. Or they didn't, I don't know whether that's true, but they thought she wasn't. She certainly wasn't as beautiful as her sister. And this sort of rubbed in the salt, I suppose.
All this would make a mother... Well, could make a mother quite hard, having these two things to cope with, couldn't it, actually?
Yes.
I mean, trying to look, I'm just struggling to look at things from Pamela's point of view, you know. I mean, she didn't have it easy, did she, really?
No, she didn't. No, she didn't. And then the one of the sons, you see, had something wrong with his hip.
Really?
Or I think he had a hip operation that went wrong or something, but yeah, anyway, really? He's lame.
Mm.
Which again was a worry.
Mm. Yes. How did Dame Marjorie get on with her grandchildren?
Well, oddly enough, she was, as you know, she was a fairly unconventional person in many ways. But she was very conventional about certain things, and it, for instance, it irked her that they didn't change for dinner.
Really?
Yes, and she made that very obvious. And when they came in the evening in their dirty jeans, she would correct them in a way she would never have corrected Michael.
Mm.
And that irked them. And I suppose it irked her.
Mm.
And it irked them sufficiently for them, I think, to not to appreciate her as much as I would have liked them to.
Mm. So she wasn't totally free and easy with them?
No, she wasn't. Mm. Oddly. Well, certainly not with the girl.
Mm.
Maybe the boys got away with it a bit more.
Mm.
But Oriel, I remember complaining to me, why did she go on while I should have got out of my jeans or something? Mm. Well, nobody does. You know?
Mm. Oriel's now working in undeveloped countries or something, isn't she?
Now, Oriel is now, she was teaching in Bermondsey or somewhere in London.
Yes.
She's married a charming South African who is over here, I should think, for good, because he doesn't approve of the politics there. He comes from Namibia, and he is also teaching. They've both given up their teaching jobs, and they're going into computers, and he's doing a course, and they're moving down to Portsmouth. He's got a grant to do, a 2-year course in computers. Mm. And they're very happy to marry it, and it's a great success.
What about the two boys? I'm not fair with them.
One was in shelter for some time,
mm.
and he's now not in shelter, but he's certainly in housing. It may be in another charity or local authority, I'm not quite sure. The other one who's got the lame leg is a doctor,
mm-hmm.
and I think a GP now. And both married with children, mm. I think quite happy. And
mm.
Unsuccessful careers.
Mm. Can you fill me in a bit about Michael? I mean, as I said to you, we're speaking very confidentially now, really. I mean, as I said in my letter to you, I couldn't see how somebody who'd been to Oxford for 3 years could write the sort of rather crude letters that he wrote. I mean, almost semi-literate sort of letters. Not a cultivated person, really. It seems to me, not an educated person, really. How can you explain that? I mean, was he a successful doctor?
He was a neurologist.
Was he?
If that's the right expression, took up the legal side. I mean, when there were cases for compensation,
mm.
he was called as a medical witness, and he did a lot more in the courts than I think he did on the wards.
I see, so he became an expert in the legal medical
Yes, he did, side. Yes. I've never had a letter from him, so I just don't know that.
Really? You rather surprised me. I never would have thought that he would have kept...
No, I don't think I ever have.
Really? So there really was quite a distance between his family and yours, really? I mean...
Yes, there was this rather unfortunate break that they didn't like Nita selling Woodgate. And then I think I was probably instrumental in perhaps bringing it back a bit when Nita was dying. I'd just been bombed in London, and so I hadn't got a flat because it was flat. And I stayed with Nita while I was recovering from my bombing, and realised that she was dying, and she did in fact die in about 3 months' time. And I remember then writing to the Corbetts, writing I think to Marjorie, and perhaps her sister Cicely, and saying, look, this is position, she's dying, she's spending hours writing her will in the most distressing way. And She's not the Nita you used to know. And they couldn't have been sweeter. And then sort of came to and came. I think they'd been in touch with the children, perhaps.
Mm.
But they then got in touch again and visited. And I think perhaps I sort of rather renewed my contact with them from that time.
So,
And I always liked Cicely because she was very witty, not at all like Marjorie.
Really?
And very entertaining. Very caustic. And not overwhelming in kindness the way Marjorie was, but great fun.
Marjorie was fun, though.
Oh, great fun.
But not witty, you'd say. I mean,
well, she wasn't caustic wit.
Oh, never she, that. No, no,
she,
quite.
I mean, she had a very sharp wit, but Cicely wouldn't have spared anybody.
Yes, I see.
She could make a quite joke out of it, you know.
Yes, I mean, Dame Marjorie was always positive about in her comments
oh,
about
yes.
anybody.
Yes, she was.
Never,
yes.
ever depreciated anybody.
Never. Never.
I mean, maybe that's part of where her religious beliefs
yes,
come
never.
Into things. I mean, she didn't look at things in a sort of rational, clinical way at all. It was always bringing out the best.
Always. And, of course, she got the best out of people.
Yes, she did. You saw that happening, did you?
Oh, yes, yes. And I remember my sister Nita saying, why Marjorie got to fight these impossible constituencies where she hasn't got a chance of anything. Waste of her time. But you see, Marjorie felt she was keeping the flag flying, and she didn't want to get into Parliament.
Yes, right, yes, yes. You had your cake and ate it in a way, that
yes,
way.
Yes,
yes, yes. Do you think she was fed up about, or disillusioned about, the way British politics were going later
on? Oh, yes,
on
I think she was, yes, yes. She was. I mean, she was bitterly disappointed about the League of Nations. And, you know, she was offered a damehood, whatever you call it, before and refused because she was so fed up with whatever the government was then.
Right.
And then took it later. But she was, of course, I think she was really more interested in international politics than...
That's true.
...than insular
yes,
politics.
Yes.
And I think she was very sad at the way things were going.
Yes. What sort of things, you mean, wars continuing, no
yes,
progress
yes,
in internationalism?
Yes, no progress, yes.
Yes.
And when I went to Berlin in 1949, I've got a letter which I brought somewhere to show you, which I'll show you afterwards, which I wrote to Marjorie from Berlin. I was sent out because I was a Labour Party candidate and they rather wanted people to go out there, I think. And so I spent something like a fortnight there, and she gave me a lot of introductions. And the German leaders of the women's movements out there all thought the world of Marjorie, you see, and they were only counting the days when she would come back again to them and they could make it up. And that visit certainly made me realise what an enormous international reputation she had.
Of personal affection between individuals.
Yes, indeed, indeed, yes.
Yes, quite, yes. Did you ever hear her speaking, actually, or public speaking, I mean, on the platform?
No, I don't think I ever did.
Because she obviously had a manner which was very successful in conferences. So.
She must have.
And she told me she learned that from watching her father, really. I mean,
yes,
going
yes.
round with him. And at one stage she was forced to speak instead of him because he was called away somewhere. And that forced her
to stand up
and speak.
I don't think I ever did, although... no, I don't think I did. But she, you see, she had no... I imagine she had no platform nerves at all. And she wasn't in the least shy. She could make contact with anybody straight away.
Mm.
She had slightly shy manner, but she wasn't shy. I mean,
she was never
aggressive.
Not in the least.
In the slightest. Well, she not in the least. A strange combination in a way.
But there was something about her which went out from her.
Yes, I think
to people, true. You know. And it didn't matter who they were, whether it was my brother or the gardener or who, she would make contact with them. There was a warmth that came out from her. And I think the same thing, you see, on a platform.
It's quite true. What about dress and things like that? Dress and makeup?
She's rather particular about her dress.
Was she?
Yes, she was. She's quite fussy about it. Very anxious that it shouldn't be in any way soiled. That if she had a white collar, that it should be immaculate. She would say, am I quite all right? And partly, I think, with Pamela in the background, Pamela had sometimes found a swat of food on her frock or something and said, oh, there you are, Mama, you spotted your frock again. And that upset her dreadfully.
You mean actually spotting the frock or being told that she'd spotted it?
Both, I think, that she'd been found out, you see.
Yes.
And I was terribly anxious it shouldn't happen. And when she was staying with me, she said, am I looking all right? You know, there isn't any spot on this. I don't know, perhaps her eyes were not quite so good then, and she was afraid she would miss it. You know?
Yes. She was worried about being a nuisance to her relatives, wasn't she?
Oh, yes, she was.
In later life, and that was one of the worries that she had.
Yes, or to anybody. I mean, she would come to us in all a diffident way and say, I hope I won't be a nuisance. And I'd say, for heaven's sake, you know. Why on earth should you be?
She was quite puritanical in a way, wasn't she? I mean, that is, I remember she was very upset when they had this earlier scheme for some film or something that some Dane had made about Christ being homosexual. I mean, it's the same thing has been coming again, hasn't
yes,
it, recently?
Yes, yes.
And she was really angry about that.
Well,
I mean,
she?
You know, what they try to say the worst possible thing about Christ, yes, there's no limit to what they will do. I mean, that is, she was quite traditional, I suppose, in her attitude to morality and religion.
Oh, yes, I think she would be.
Without being arrogant.
Yes, and I think she would have very strong moral feelings. I mean, she wouldn't like people living together if they weren't married. I expect, although I never discussed it with her, she was very anti-homosexuality.
Yes. And I think that must have been one of the things that made her rather sad about English society, really, in her later life.
Yes, yeah.
Morality didn't seem to be improving.
No, she felt standards were being dropped, just like wearing jeans for dinner.
Yes.
That this was not done.
Yes, yes. Also, she didn't like television, really, did she? And the violence on television.
No, she didn't.
Which is quite a reasonable
Yes, I mean, a lot of people don't, do they? Yes.
No, but I mean, she wasn't the sort... I mean, she was a person who was interested in what was going on and the current affairs and that sort of thing, without buying everything.
Yes, and I think she felt there were better ways of spending her time.
Yes, quite.
You know?
Yes.
That you could read a book or do something else.
Yes. I always felt she had an extraordinary balance about her, extraordinary common sense, a rich common sense.
Oh, yes, she had. I suppose she was a woman of her times, although she was, she 10 years older than me, I suppose. No, it must have been more than that. More than that, because my sister was 16 years older than me, so she must have been more than that. She was a woman of her times.
Yes. She certainly was angry, well, not angry, but sad, really, at the way the militant suffragettes, got all the credit.
Yes,
non-militants.
She was very much so, yes.
With reason, in my view.
Yes, 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 very much so.
But you see, although she felt that so very strongly, she never grumbled about it.
No, because, you see, she'd never made enemies, I don't think.
No, I think that's true.
And she was, of course, she was very family-minded. She didn't ever want, I think, to run down her family or my family.
No. No, or anybody, for that matter.
Or anybody,
but I think she did value these occasions, these birthday parties, didn't she, that she used to have?
Yes,
I don't know if you went to any of those.
I didn't, because... I was going to say, because Michael didn't ask me. No, I didn't go. I wasn't asked.
Mm. But, I mean, she loved seeing old friends and,
yes, she
and
did. Yes,
the family
yes.
around her
oh,
getting
she did.
Together.
Yes,
yes. I was very impressed in the letters she wrote how fond she was of Brian, actually. As a young woman, I mean, no doubt she was. No doubt she was later, but they're lovely letters. She wrote.
Are they?
They are.
She was devoted to Brian.
There's a lovely letter she wrote when in the First World War, when he was off in France somewhere.
Yes. Yes.
She wrote and said. When I come into the room, I suppose it must have been at Woodgate then, I immediately miss your sympathetic look as I came into the room. And at 4 o'clock in the morning or something, I think about you going over the top and worry so much, you know, all that sort of thing. I mean, it must have been a terrible time for her that time.
She said to me once after Brown's death, she said, I'm like a tree with the main branch lopped off.
Really? Really? Because it wasn't the sort of close companionship where they're always together, because Brian had some phrase, didn't he, about some people are always always together but never... What was the phrase? Anyway, the implication was that unlike some couples, they were always apart but very fond of each other,
yes,
whereas a lot
yes.
of other couples were always together and not very fond
yes.
of each other. I mean,
you never felt with that couple, Brian and Marge, you never felt one was getting at the other. Do you know what
no.
I mean?
Mm.
Although they had these separate interests and they would laugh at each other at their funny ways. Oh, well, Brian, you always forget such and such a thing, you know. But there was never any kind of bitterness in the background that you have with some couples.
Right. They were complimentary to each other.
They were. Mm. And they could laugh at each other's foibles. But you never felt that there was, with some couples, you feel there's a sort of grudge they never come to terms with.
Right. Mm.
That wasn't ever so.
What did they have in common, really, then, do you think?
A fundamental kindness, I think, and a love of mankind.
Gardening?
Yes, I don't think Brian was all that much of a gardener, but he was a countryman. A love of the country and preservation, conservation.
Mm. Did they care about their surroundings much?
Oh, yes. I mean, they adored Ashdown Forest.
Yes. So there'd be that in common.
Yes. And they loved the country around there.
Not music, though, really.
No.
Because he loved music, didn't he? But she went along with it, but she wasn't
yes,
particularly
she wasn't all that. No, I should think they shared a love of books.
Yes, what sort of books?
Well, I was just trying to think. They would certainly, I mean, share papers, newspapers and articles and that sort of thing. And of course they both doted on Michael.
Yes. I can't understand that, but still.
yeah.
He just looked so nice, I suppose. That's part
he,
of
yes, he just oozed charm. And I think he was completely secure in knowing he'd never be blamed for anything.
Mm.
And sail through life on that.
Yes. But you see, Marjorie herself didn't convey that impression to me when she talked about how she brought up Brown. I remember one of the phrases she had was...
Brought up Michael.
Michael, I mean. She said, one of the phrases she had was, don't often say no, but when you say no, mean it.
Well, she very seldom said it.
You see, yes, it's true.
That's the answer. Yeah.
Because I had the impression, not only from you but from others, that he was really a pretty uncontrolled child.
Oh, yes, he was. She once told me that, I mean, I don't think he travelled to that a lot, but she once told me that she went to Italy on one of these dues, and she was leading a procession to the government buildings, I suppose, to the Prime Minister's house or whatever, I don't know. And Michael, who she'd left in the care of somebody, had of course escaped. And there he was in the procession waving a little flag. And the Italian public, you see, who were children, you know, mad about children, thought this little golden-haired boy, you see, was just the thing, and they screamed their pleasure and enthusiasm. Marjorie, who hadn't expected to see him there, was rather startled. But I mean, it's just like Michael that he'd escaped whoever he was left with.
Yes, I expect, he was very much a sort of a boy's boy, wasn't he? I mean, very much not coddled at home. But
oh, no, he wasn't. And of course, he had a lovely open-air life there, and they had animals and wide open spaces.
Right. Right.
And farm buildings to climb over and pony to ride.
What about class? One last thing I'm tempted to ask you. I mean, she didn't really have much class for you,
no,
did she?
Not
really?
At all. Not at all.
I mean, did she move at ease with people of any social class?
I think she did.
Say?
Absolutely, yes. Mm. And they with her.
Mm. Men as well as women.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. And she had, I mean, she was nice looking, and she was, I think, very attractive to men and women.
Yes. She's not the sort of feminist at all who disliked men.
Not at all.
Not in the slightest.
Not at all. And she had all the feminine graces and good looks.
Yes, she has it always, really, doesn't
yes.
she?
And well, Turner, whenever she came to me, she always bought some clothes. We had a nearly new shop for in aid of mine that I was chairman of. And she always went there, I think, partly from charity and partly to support the cause that I was working for, but partly because she wanted some new clothes. And I think she was quite happy that I should go along with her, rather than go along with Pamela, who might be more critical.
Yes, yes. Pamela said that it was quite difficult to get her out of black after Brown died.
Yes, yes, it was.
I mean, she had to be tempted out of it.
Yes, it was. But on the other hand, she wore a white collar or white cuffs or white jabot or something like that with her black and very becoming clothes.
Yes, she always looked nice, but
yes.
I mean, I had the impression that she basically clothes, comfort, even food and drink weren't of major importance.
Oh, no, they weren't at all, no. And she wasn't the sort of person who would normally have worn a lot of tweeds, I think. I mean, she was more feminine than that.
Yes, oh yes, very much so. She had this marvellous phrase of her father's, whatever you do, don't reform your clothes.
Yes.
A maxim of prudence. Really.
Yes,
absolutely,
yes.
Dead right.
Yes, I think so, yes. But she'd notice other people's clothes.
Oh, yes, yes.
Very much so.
But, you know, you must keep your priorities right. If you want to achieve anything, you mustn't put people off by your appearance.
No, that's it. Yeah. And I think she was conscious of that. She was, a bit of an actress. She was a public figure, and she was conscious of that.
Yes.
And she had good platform manners.
Yes.
And she was always gracious to
people. Yes, quite, absolutely. Yes, I always had the impression. I mean, she was an actress, but without the sort of self-consciousness, the self-centeredness of actors.
Oh, yes, because she wasn't, you see, she wasn't in the least a selfish person.
No.
She was much more interested in other people.
Mm. I'm sure that's true.
And she wasn't thinking about herself. And she wasn't thinking about the effect she was making. She was thinking about what she was going to achieve in that relationship.
Yes, but without being in any way ruthless. Somehow.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's a very
yes,
nice combination
absolutely.
Of qualities, actually. Mm. Of course, she observed her parents, who were successful operators
yes,
in their
yes,
areas.
Mm.
I suppose she had an early training in it. Mm. Tell me about her relations with her sisters, then. I mean, how...
Oh, she's very fond of Cicely.
Was she?
Mm. Yes. Who was quite different. I think she slightly regretted that Cicely was more socialistic than she was, but accepted it.
Mm. Mm.
And she doted on her brother.
Yes, the brother's an unknown quantity to me. What happened to him? I ought to know.
Well, he was my brother-in-law,
yes.
You see. And he was christened Adrian, but always called Anne. And he was at Oxford with my brothers, and that's how he came to know my sister.
Right.
And he was very good-looking. Very good-looking. Rather like Michael, but better-looking, I think, than Michael.
Mm.
And she doted on him.
Really?
But so did his parents, but it didn't spoil him, wasn't in the least spoiled.
Mm. So how did his career work out? I'm not quite...
Oh, he was very successful. He was a solicitor, and he was in Slaughter, May, and then he married my sister. I think when he became partner shortly after, and they were quite hard up. And they lived in Sheffield Terrace in London. And then he became a partner, and then the 14 War came, and he joined up in something or other, and then was whisked out of that into the Ministry of Munitions, and then he was in the Ministry of Munitions, as a legal advisor. And then after the war he joined Shell, and went up and up. And he and my sister-in-law went out to South Africa, and then they went to America, and they came back, and still in Shell, and he did very well.
Really, yes. Did she keep in touch with him a lot? I mean...
Oh, I'm sure she did.
Mm. Mm.
Yes.
Mm.
Very much so, and he was very, very fond of her.
Mm. What about Cicely, then?
She was very fond of Cicely.
But
Margie was.
How did she evolve, then, and what was her
career?
Well,
I don't think she did a lot of political work. Well, she's a member of the Labour Party, but she had a family, and she hadn't got as much money as... And it didn't seem apparent that she
yes.
had as much money as the others.
Yes.
She lived in the country. She was very much a country person. And she was very busy with her own family.
She married who? Whom, actually?
She married somebody called Fisher.
Oh, yes, I see. Hmm.
And had something like 3 children.
Hmm.
And a boy who died when he was a teenager.
Really? Hmm. So she has really good relations with both her brother and
Oh, yes,
sister.
She did, yes.
Yes, yes. I mean, it seems to have been a very happy...
I think she's very fond of... I was going to say that she doted on her brother more, but I don't know that's true. I think she's equally fond of her sister.
Mm. What about money, as far as Dame Marjorie is concerned?
Well, I imagine she always had plenty.
No, I didn't really mean how much. I mean, what was her attitude to money, really? Did you notice this when she
Oh, I think the attitude of somebody who's never been short.
Yes.
But is fairly careful, generous, but careful as regards herself. I mean, she wouldn't splash money about on herself.
That all fits, yes.
Yes. Mm. And she would take a bus and not a taxi. But then that's her sort of slightly prudish attitude, really.
Yes, yes, a characteristic middle class attitude at that time.
Yes,
yes, yes. She was very patriotic, wasn't she?
Oh, yes, very.
In a non-right-wing way, somehow.
Yes, yes. She was.
Mm. I always felt she was sort of quintessentially English, actually.
Yes, she was. She had an enormous love of her country, particularly the country as opposed to the town. She was very much a country woman.
Yes, yes. But there's that incident in Berkhamsted. When she stood at Berkhamsted in 1937, at the hustings after, at the, you know, when the candidates' results were announced, she said she objected to the way in which Lady Davidson, as she later became, had used the Union Jack on the table as a symbol for the Conservative Party.
Yeah, yeah.
And she was angry about that because she felt it was her flag as much as
that. Yes.
Which is a perfectly legitimate thing to do.
Indeed.
To think.
Oh, indeed.
But, of course, it wasn't the right thing to say after you'd lost.
Yeah, but she would have said it before. I mean, she'd have.
She would have said it before.
She should have said it before.
It was the only moment in her career, in my feeling, when she made a mistake, an indiscretion in a way, because it gave the impression of being a bad loser.
Yes, and she wasn't. she wasn't a bad loser, and of course, deep down, she didn't want the seat anyway.
No, quite. No, absolutely. Absolutely. That's interesting. I mean, is there anything else, I mean, that you thought I had wrong or needed to get right in that picture of her?
No, I think, as I said to you, I felt that you perhaps underestimated her difficulties of living with a daughter-in-law and a son in the house that had been hers.
Yes. I think that
was, and which was no longer hers.
That was a difficulty.
And where she was denigrated, in a sense, and how much she appreciated coming to other places where people looked upon her as the honoured guest.
Yes, by denigrated you mean depreciated, really.
Yes.
I mean, not actually attacked.
No, not attacked.
But put in her place.
Yes, I'm rather implying, oh, well, you're at your age, you can't know. You know, you don't know.
Awful.
And well, we needn't pay any. Well, you would think that, you know.
It's very, very odd. Yes. Yes, I suppose.
And really, not being consulted. I mean, at table, I felt that she was not brought into the conversation because her opinions were not considered of any value.
Very strange.
And it was her table.
Yes, quite. Yes,
you know.
Yes. I mean, it's really marvellous that she never complained to anybody about.
Absolutely.
She must have felt.
Absolutely not.
Yes. I suppose, well, when you say she, when power arrives, you sort of hunched up as an old lady and so on, it was partly, I suppose, this was the position she was in her own house.
Yes, and I think perhaps she felt ashamed that she was being shown up in front of me, where she had been the honoured.